joining us today. I had to move some stuff around. John, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. So we have a question of the day that has nothing to do with football, but I'll let Joe ask it. But I feel like you'll have a good answer being in the Houston area.
Yeah, John, our question today is your favorite all-time college basketball player, because the tournament starts this week. We want to know. We got so many responses. We wanted to ask you, because you were down there for Phi Slamma Jamma. What was all that like, John?
Now, in Phi Slamma Jamma, which was the best team I've ever seen not to win a championship, they got to the championship game, went to the Final Four 3 years in a row, had Hakeem Olajuwon, Clyde Drexler, had four number one picks. And the semifinal game, when they played Louisville, the Doctors of Dunk, it was Phi Slamma Jamma versus the Doctors of Dunk. And that was the most exciting, electrifying, high-flying game I have ever seen, because you had Daryl Griffith from Louisville and Drexler, those guys, Benny Anders, they all put on a show dunking the basketball. And U of H beat them. And I would encourage anybody, go on YouTube, look up that semifinal game, because it was spectacular. Everybody said, and they still say to this day, they didn't call it the best game they've ever seen. They call it the most electrifying because of the players who were on there. And then, of course, in the championship, they got beat. Winningham had a shot that was short. Lorenzo Charles caught it, put it in. Jim Valvano ran around the court looking for somebody to hug. The Cougars were devastated. And they've had some good teams this year. They were number one in the country, and they lost to Iowa State. Iowa State is 17-1 of the odds of winning the national championship. And we're going to Las Vegas. We go for the first two rounds of the tournament when the excitement is just through the roof. And I told my wife, whatever the odds are on Las Vegas winning, I mean, Iowa State, now I don't think they're going to win it, but it's 17-1. I said, put $100 on it and see if we can make a little money. And so this University of Houston team has lost three key players for injuries, but you know, you don't need really more than seven unless you get serious foul trouble. So right now, everybody's picking UConn, just about everybody. And it's amazing to me how many people don't pick Houston to go to the Final Four, even though they were number one or two most of the season. And they're really good. Best college defensive team I've ever seen, well coached. And, of course, there's going to be upsets right off the bat. I don't put much stock in my Baylor Bears. I'm hoping they can at least get to the Sweet 16. So that Phi Slamma Jamma team is still the most exciting college team I've ever seen.
John McClain is with us. Now shifting into the NFL, the Titans introduced Calvin Ridley on Friday. And, John, he was pretty honest on why he ended up in Tennessee and not re-signing with Jacksonville or going elsewhere. The Titans made a pretty significant investment with him. What do you think the Titans are getting in Calvin Ridley at 29 years old?
When he came back, basically after being 2 years off with suspension and his health issues, and he played well but not great last year. But when you've missed as much time as he did, I think that's what you wanted to see last year. I saw him have a couple of big drops in games against Texans, but he's a good receiver. When you have money like Rand Cawthorn had, you know, you got to sometimes do what people think is overspending if you're in competition with other teams. And when you've got a young quarterback, you got to do everything you can to put players around him. And sometimes that requires going over budget, like I'm sure they did with Ridley, giving him, what, $50 million guaranteed. Yeah. And but I'll guarantee you that Will Levis will feel a lot more comfortable having him there. And now, because of that signing, and I'm guessing now they'll use that first pick on Joe Alt from Notre Dame, who's the best offensive lineman. And I spent time with him here when he was a finalist for the Lombardi Award. I did a luncheon in which I interviewed the Lombardi finalists for an hour for sponsors, and he seemed like such a great guy. So imposing physically. I mean, he towers. He's actually closer to 6'9 than 6'8, comes from a football family. And if the Titans can get Joe Alt for Brian Callahan's dad, Bill, I'm sure Bill be turning cartwheels because that guy's everything you want on and off the field.
Yeah, and here's the thing on Joe Alt, John, is I look at him and I can't find anything wrong, which scares me. You know, whenever there's like, you know, something too perfect, it probably is, but it just feels like, and anybody you talk to, that he can come in, plug in right away, and be your starting left tackle, barring injury, for the next 10 years.
Well, before teams started losing players a lot when the salary cap shot up, we used to always say, you take an offensive tackle in the top 10, pencil him in for the next 10 years. Now, of course, with free agency, you can never tell. But Alt is a big-time prospect. He will. As long as he stays healthy, he's going to be in there. He's going to play great. You know, take an offensive lineman the first year, 2 years in a row, that tells everybody where they're going to run the ball, which side. And but it's you don't have to worry about it again. And the fact is, it's not underrated that Bill Callahan's here because everybody knows he came to be the line coach, but not just – he's a former head coach who can give good advice to his son. And they're close, and the son is going to want advice. He better want advice. He may not always take it like he did when he grew up, and you can't put him in a timeout chair or ground him. But having his dad there that he can bounce things off of, including maybe some things he doesn't want to ask other coaches, you just can't overestimate the value of the Browns letting Bill Callahan come to the Titans to coach for his son.
I agreed. We're talking to the great John McClain this morning on the Chase and Big Joe show. John, when you got word that Justin Fields was traded from the Bears to the Steelers, did you refresh your app to say, is this accurate? Is this what they got in return? I was kind of shocked what the Bears got back for that. Am I wrong in this, John?
I think the Bears, they traded him because that's where he wanted to go. They did right by him. And I know it was so funny a month ago listening to all the people, former players on ESPN and NFL Network saying the Bears were crazy if they didn't keep Justin Fields and traded the pick so somebody else could take Caleb Williams. And I'm like, what planet are you guys on? What has Fields shown in 3 years that he can be a Super Bowl quarterback? He can't. And if you, at least not with the Bears, if you have a quarterback for 3 years, and you haven't seen enough from him to make you think he's capable of taking you to the Super Bowl, if you put people around him, you've got to move on, especially when you have the first overall pick and a quarterback prospect is highly rated as Caleb Williams is. And I think it'll be good for Fields. Everybody loves Fields. There's a thing on The Athletic yesterday about how popular he was despite being so inconsistent, and how the spectrum of criticism and praise was amazing because some thought he could do no wrong, had incredible potential, should be the quarterback, and others like can't get rid of him quick enough. But I think that was great for him. And I'll bet you that he's starting at some point. I don't understand why people act like Russell Wilson is the answer to the Steelers' prayers. Pete Carroll's Hall of Fame coach. He didn't want him. Sean Payton's a Hall of Fame coach. He didn't want him. Now, all of a sudden, he's an answer to the Steelers' prayers. He certainly wasn't for the Seahawks in the end and for the Broncos last year. And I'll remind you that stat I saw on ESPN a while back. In their victories, 40% of his completions were at or behind the line of scrimmage. He had the lowest average per attempt of his career. And that's not good when you're his age as far as throwing down the field with accuracy and velocity.
All right, so, John, that leads now to the number one pick in Caleb Williams. I asked you this because we saw it in 83 with John Elway. We saw it in 2004 with Eli Manning. They refused to play for the teams that drafted them. Are we going to see another scenario here with Caleb Williams? Because word has come out that he doesn't want to play for the Bears and yada, yada, yada. What do we make of all this?
He doesn't play outfield for the Yankees in their minor league system like Elway did. And Elway threatened to go full-time to baseball. George Steinbrenner was very vocal about wanting him to do it, which played right into the Colts' hands. And the reason he didn't want to go to the Colts, Frank Cush, known as one of the all-time toughest drill sergeants when he was at Arizona State, had been hired by Baltimore. And he just almost killed his players physically, plus they were bad. He didn't want to play there, and he had options. And so they traded him, what was, well, turned out to be one of the worst trades in history, to the Broncos. And then Phillip Rivers, there's no Phillip Rivers there this year, I don't see. He might turn out to be Phillip Rivers, but the when they took Eli number one and he had to come out and put on that Chargers cap, he had a frown on his face. And Archie, the problem with the Chargers was A.J. Smith, the general manager. He had problems constantly with head coaches. Marty Schottenheimer went, I believe, 12-4. And they said things were so bad between A.J. Smith and Marty Schottenheimer, they wouldn't communicate. There was an intermediary who had to go up and down every time those two wanted to tell each other something. I guess neither one had figured out how to use a computer and email. And so this one person in the office was constantly, must have been better shaped than the players, going up and down the stairs, exchanging messages from each of them. And then Marty got fired, and the Mannings didn't want any part of that organization. Now, the Chargers got a great deal. They got Rivers, and they got picks for Eli.
He is John McClain joining us from Houston. We'll have more with him coming up next on the Chasing Big Joe Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. John, looks like the Titans have reportedly signed defensive tackle Sebastian Joseph Day. He's been with the Rams, the Chargers, the 49ers. Don't know how much of a big deal that is, but they needed some help up front to go along with Jeffrey Simmons.
Well, it's not a big deal because he's bounced around like a pinball, but what they can get out of him, be part of a rotation. You guys know how much it hurt to miss Simmons last year. He's one of the best in the NFL. And if you got that problem of needing interior defensive linemen, and it is amazing to me, I've just gone over top 150 free agents on The Athletic, top 100 on NFL.com, top 100 Pro Football Talk. Defensive tackles, you know how many is out there? 38-year-old Calais Campbell. You can get ends, corners, safeties, wide receivers, but the defensive tackles were gobbled up or re-signed. And so if you can get a guy like that, it is very, very impressive. The Texans have made big-time changes. It's not often a team goes from 32-6 against the run, and they have three defensive linemen who are gone. Jonathan Grenard signed with Minnesota, and they replaced him with Danielle Hunter from Minnesota. Sheldon Rankins, who played really well, got $13 million a year to go to Cincinnati, and they wouldn't pay that. And then they traded their other starter for the last 3 years, Malik Collins, to the 49ers for $7 million. So we know what's going to happen with Autry and Hunter, but they're top priority because there's nobody in free agency they're going to have to use, I believe, one of their two second-round picks on a defensive tackle. And so if you can get a guy like that, you better jump on it.
John, what do you think is going to happen with this thing with L'Jarius Sneed in Kansas City? It was reported over the weekend that it was all but done with the Colts. Then everybody comes out and says that's not true at all, that there's nothing imminent with the Colts. And so now, you know, Kansas City is kind of like, look, we'll keep him on the franchise tag, but he's not getting a long-term deal. So it's ultimately up to Sneed and his representation to try and find a dance partner, and then obviously the Chiefs have to get compensation that they're going to be happy with. So where do you see this going?
Only time that could happen to me would be right before the draft, and I believe he'll still be back there. You know, you got Chris Jones done. They're not going to be able to sign Sneed to any kind of a deal like that. Sneed had a great year this season, and it's the last year of his contract, and so maybe they want him to do it again. I don't blame him. I think he's 27. That's when you get the big bucks, and guys never like the franchise tag, but they don't want to get worse. They want to get better. They've done really well in the draft on their secondary, and I don't see them getting rid of him. It's a good draft for corners, but picking last, there's no guarantee you're going to get a top guy.
John, what do you think of Mike Vrabel taking a quote-unquote off-the-field job with the Cleveland Browns this coming season?
I think that's great for the Browns. He'll be a consultant in personnel and coaching. I think Mike's one of the best coaches in the league. I'm still shocked, as everybody I know is, that he didn't get a head coaching job. I'm guessing next year he'll be the hottest prospect on the market, but that's a really good deal for Stefanski to bring him in there. It's like last year. You know, they hired Schwartzy, and what was his title with the Titans? Some kind of advisory role?
Yeah.
Something like that.
So they hired him, and that worked out great. Now, Vrabel's not going to coach anything specifically. He's just going to help. And you know, Mike can show the tight ends how to catch touchdown passes, and he can help the defensive coaches. And because he was so heavily involved in personnel, they'll at least want to get his opinion on prospects. I thought that was a really good move for the Browns.
John, you're down there, you're covering the Houston Texans. I mean, they were active in free agency and everything. What do you see this Texans team in 2024, John? Because I think they've elevated themselves into the conversation of being one of those five or six teams that could win the Super Bowl. I mean, they got some great players. If C.J. Stroud can keep going what he's doing, John, I mean, they've got a great shot next year.
They signed nine defensive players because they play that first-place schedule. So many great quarterbacks, even though they were 11th on defense. And started up front. They still need a corner right now. Derek Stingley Jr., who's played great when he's healthy, but he's missed games in each of his first two seasons. And Jeff Okuda, who came from Atlanta after he bombed out in Detroit, being the third overall pick, if they had to play tomorrow, he'd be the other starting corner. They had two number two picks, and I think there'll be a defensive tackle and a cornerback. And everybody here is like, oh, my God, they need another receiver. Well, they do, but their two best, Nico Collins and Tank Dell, with third-round picks. So why do you need to use a second-round pick on a wide receiver? And I'm writing a column about that right now for HoustonTexans.com. But I saw a thing today, Joe, that I think it was The Athletic. I can't remember, that had them, and looking at early rankings, had them fourth in the NFL. I don't buy it. People seem to forget they're playing a first-place schedule. They play five division winners. They play 11 games against teams that had winning records. And so it's going to be tougher. So people here get really angry when I say on TV and the radio here that I don't think they're a Super Bowl contender. And this year, I think 25 is more likely. But everybody certainly is getting their hopes built up because of all the moves they've made. And then, you know, once the draft's over, people will be even more fired up. So I don't want to burst their bubble unless they ask, like you did.
Well, doesn't that happen sometimes when a team, and let's just call it what it is, overachieves? Like, I don't think anybody expected the Texans. I know you didn't. We've talked about it, to be what they were last year. And then they end up winning the division and going to the playoffs with Stroud in his rookie year. And so when that happens, it puts you ahead of schedule, and they kind of have to have a free agency like they did, but it doesn't mean it's all going to work out.
And nobody envisioned that. Jacksonville was runaway winner of the division. Everybody picked the Jaguars. I lost a $100 bet to one of my former radio guys that I was on the air with. He said, do you take Jacksonville or the field? I said, I'm taking Jacksonville. You know, the Titans and Colts and Texans are all going to have rookie quarterbacks. No way one of those guys is going to be good enough to help them win the division. Now, three teams had winning records. Division was a lot better than people thought. And I can't wait to see Will Levis and Anthony Richardson and C.J. Stroud, what they do in their second seasons based on whatever has been done to add talent around them. It's going to be a really talented division as far as young quarterbacks, but the Texans are going to get the Jaguars treatment. Everybody's going to pick them to run away with a division because they got a quarterback who should be a franchise quarterback, and we'll just see.
John, the Vikings keep methodically moving up in the draft this year and everything else. You see a scenario where they jump up into the top, maybe with the Titans, swap a pick to grab a quarterback that they so desperately want to get right now?
Could be. And problem is, you better go higher than that. What if you say go to five, and then Arizona trades with somebody else for the four, Oof. And J.J. McCarthy, who seems to be going up, up, up since he worked out in his shorts and in his underwear, which always drives me crazy. Why can't you go back and watch every play of his career at Michigan and know where he should be ranked? I think he's been overrated because he looked great because of the desperation. But if you really and truly want to be guaranteed of getting him, you better make the trade with Arizona. How embarrassing would it be if they were to move up to five, assured that Arizona was going to take Marvin Harrison Jr., and then somebody made them an offer they couldn't refuse? You talk about having egg on your face. You got big time egg on your face as you try to tell, well, we love Sam Darnold. He's going to be our starter. He's a former franchise quarterback who bombed out, of course, third overall pick. But you better go to four with Arizona. Great spot for Arizona to get their top two picks, which the Texans traded at 23 for a two and another pick and two other picks. And so I just think if you're going to make that deal, Joe, or Chase, it better be a sure thing.
John, great stuff as always. Enjoy these conversations. We'll do it again next week.
I look forward to it, guys. Thank you very much as always.
Absolutely. John McClain joining us from Houston.